Horus Heresy, Thief of Revelations, by Graham McNeil, directed by Christian Dunn, performed by Gareth Armstrong, Martin Ellis, Jonathan Keeble, and Toby Longworth. Of all the truths Azek Araman had learned as a scholar of the Corvidae, this was the most galling. The understanding that but events on Prospero had shown his fingers like wind-blown dust. A curling horn of white stone raised on the edge of a geomantically volatile plateau was a thing of beauty. The glittering of warp-charged rock, but Araman could not bring himself to reoccupy his former chambers. A devil's bargain, perhaps, but one that might see the thousand suns elevated to their former glory and vindicate their actions in the eyes of the fools who condemned them. The Book of Magnus, his Primarch's last gift to him, lay open on a lectern of glass and silver, its heavy pages rustling with a life of their own. Precious little else remained of the accumulated endless shelf that spiraled from the base of the tower. Held immobile by coruscating chains of light, a bound figure was spread in a cruciform pattern. The body had once been that of a legionary, a perfect representation of all that humanity could achieve. A paladin of enlightenment, but now his name had once been Astonel, though the flesh change had taken him. He hung a meter from the reflective floor, and fire crawled across his skin. Phosphor-bright traceries limned his veins where ash. Demonic coals burned in sunken eye sockets, and his lips were stretched in the rictus grin of a burning reaper. The mouth moved, but no sounds emerged from Astonel's throat. Only furnace-hot blasts of superheated air. Concentric circles enclosed the transformed legionary, wards that had been used by the practicers of the Thousand Suns for centuries when releasing their subtle bodies into the ether. By such means were the denizens of the great ocean kept at bay, and by such means could nine circles of lunar caustic were described around Astonel, six of which had already burned away, the argent gleam of each ring slowly fading until it was black and inert. The luster of the seventh ring was already dying. Araman had learned much from the transformative empathy of Hathor Mark. Together, they had examined the hybrid architect, learning something more of the mutations racking the Legion's warriors. Araman circled the seething fire creature that Astonel had become, a cauldron of energy within. Astonel's voice echoed in his head.
Again, Azek. Why do you persist in this foolishness?
Araman made no attempts to justify what he was. Those who benefited from his labors would hear any justifications, and by then it would not matter how he had affected their...
You are doomed to fail, Azek. You know that, of course. Shall I tell you why?
You are going to tell me anyway, so why bother asking?
Astonu's burning grin spread wider.
You will fail because you think a flesh change is to be feared. You think it's a curse, but you can't see it for the boon it is.
Straight the outer layers of the warrior's burning flesh.
A boon? Is it a boon to have all that you once were stripped away? To stand on the precipice of enlightenment? No. You were once glorious. But now you are a monster.
A monster! The flesh change has shown me that there are few monsters who warrant the fear we have of them. I and others like me are becoming. But everyone carries around their own monsters. Especially you, Azek.
Araman knew that Astonu's in his psyche, and the best barbs were those who forced Astonu's words from his mind, and trace the myriad paths into the future that follow the degeneration of Astonu's flesh. While the fiery creature remonstrated and taunted him, he watched a thousand iterations of Astonu's hyper-evolution. In some, the fire eventually consumed him. In others, it waxed and waned, but in none of them did it reverse. Without intervention, Astonu's body would only ever devolve further into its warped state, back into himself. Feeling the cold of the lunar caustic in his bones as he withdrew into his own mind. His armor felt heavy upon his frame, every plate of ivory-trimmed ceramite shimmering in reflected flame light. But the things he was learning were enabling him to understand the progress of the flesh change. And what could be understood could be mastered. Such was the suddenness and violence of Astonu's change that Ahriman had discovered him with relative ease. Brarian's consciousness lay across this planet like a web, and a warrior's degeneration plucked at its threads like nothing else.
You can't stop it, Azik. It will come to us all. The ninefold gift is already in you. I see it already.
Anger touched Ahriman, and he stepped closer to the edge of the circle as the gleaming light had...
You will not take me, Astonu. I will not let it.
Whoever said it was up to you?
Too late. Ahriman realized that the last of the wards around Astonu had burned down to black. The fire creature hurled itself at him. The shimmering veins of its body flared. Ahriman swatted Astonu aside with a hurried kind blow. But his former brother sprang to his feet like a cat, his body wreathed in a rippling corona of white flames. The air blurred with heat haze, and a wordless babble of unsyllables dripped from Astonu's lips like curses. Ahriman's senses flickered into the immediate future, and he swayed aside as Astonu leapt across the chamber. Flames sprang up in his wake, each after-image of his presence imprinting a shrieking echo onto the world. Ahriman extended his arm and summoned his Hecker staff to his hand. He swung it like a broadsword, a curved crook catching Astonu in his midriff and doubling him up. Ghostly flames rippled along the length of the sky. Astonu lunged again, and a burst of flaming breath went ahead of him. Before it struck Ahriman, a glittering sphere of freezing air surrounded Astonu. He screamed as his fires were extinguished, and the light burning in his veins dimmed to the faintest glow. Held immobile by an orb of purest chill, Astonu raged impotently in his restless ambition in his biology that spoke of powerful biomancy.
A creature of fire, and you don't think to use the Pavoni arts against it. You're forgetting how to use your powers, brother.
Ahriman turned to see Hathor Mard with his hands extended before him. A frost-white Raven Amon stood behind him, their auras alight with channeled power. While his subtle body had been within the protective circle, he had not sensed their approach. The venerable Amon approached the hissing, defiant form of Astonu, studying the warrior's disfigured physiology with an expression of horror.
What has become of you?
What will become of us all if we fail?
Amon nodded, accepting Ahriman's words.
I'm petulant, but there's only so long I can hurry up and kill him!
Ahriman drew his power back into himself, rising into the enumerations to focus his thoughts. He nodded to Hathor Mard, who dropped his hands. Astonu flew at them, but he was hot-web. Ahriman's will was a physical thing, an extension of his... It took hold of Astonu and broke. The crack of splitting bone filled the chamber, and the firelight in Astonu's body faded, like aura dispersed like wind-blown smoke. And a sliver of Ahriman's heart turned to stone at the loss of another. Mard saw his anguish.
Don't waste your sorrow on degenerates like him.
A man of knowledge must be able not only to love his enemies, but also to hate his friends.
Amon turned the dead body's head from side to side, as though he might see something to explain its degeneration just by looking at it. Sobek knelt.
Or by not delving.
And did you learn anything of use from him?
Ahriman hesitated before answering.
I now... No, not yet.
King.
You know we cannot.
Why? Tell me. He stopped this once before. He can do it again.
He did nothing but... In his arrogance, he thought he had mastered what the powers of the great oceans...
He can stop it. Now who's being arrogant?
You have been away from the Legion too long, Amon. Your wanderings take you to the farthest corners of the world.
Amon stepped close to him.
Then I have learned as much as you, Azek.
Sobek was quick to step between Amon and Ahriman.
The Primarch!
We have been down this road before. Ready, we will bring it to our father. If he should learn of the great work while it is incomplete and untested...
There's enough to stop it. When was the last presence abroad in the world?
Loquaciousness, never a difficult task, and his features subtly shifted to assume a more stately look.
Magnus broods alone in the Obsidian Tower. Who knows what thoughts fill his head? Certainly not the fate of his few remaining sons.
You presume to...
Do I? Then what do you suggest we do? Meekly await what the tides...
But strode to where Astonu's twisted corpse lay. The nobility and awesome majesty it had once possessed, now ruined and cheeks flushed with color, and his aura shifted into the higher enumerations of combat. Sobek amplified his Corviday powers to project futures of broken bones, burned flesh, and their own ruination into each warrior's... And Sobek flinched at images of their own death, and the dissipating energies flared from the psychoconductive spire of the tower in a burst of Etherica's center.
We are embarked on this course, and our purpose is set. And to forget one's purpose is the commonest form of stupidity.
And to repeat the same thing over and over again, of insanity.
Then what do you suggest?
You know what I suggest.
Very well, King.
The Obsidian Tower was well named. A crooked spike of black rock that towered above all else. Its impossible construction had been achieved in Mutton King made real. Its substance darting lights. No windows or openings marred its surface, save those willed into being by the Primarch. At its peak, a pellucid radiance, part illumination, part eater of light. It was impossible to look upon it and not feel the gaze of the Crimson King. An all-seeing, all-knowing presence that left no shadows in which to hide secrets. On a world saturated, yet Ahriman still chose to travel via Thunderhawk. Like everything on this world, the aircraft had not escaped the transformative energies of their new home. Its structure had become altogether more avian, and Ahriman brought the craft around in a slow turn, circling the tower for a place to put it down. Vivid electrical storms raged like, and the jagged peaks on every horizon were limned with electrical fire that spat traceries of consciousness that flocked to men of power like acolytes to a high priest. Millions of them attended upon Magnus's tower, like the accretion rings of planets, or blood sharks with the scent of prey in the water. Ahriman angled the Thunderhawk around as an opening. He feathered the engines and raised the craft's hooked nose as he brought it down with a gentle pressure of thought. Before making his way to the assault ramp, the sense of potentiality that existed in every moment. Here, breath had power, and his was seized upon by the invisible zephyrs that flocked to him. Ahriman ignored them, and strode into the tower through an elliptical archway with edges that curved exist within the circumference of the tower, and lit in the parchments, scrolls, data crystals, hide-bound tomes, sigh songs, and haptic memes, each bearing a fragment of priceless knowledge born from the sacking of Prospero. To an outsider, such a collection would appear extensive, a repository of knowledge unmatched by any beyond the great vaults of Terra. But to the Thousand Suns, these were some gathered from the corners of the galaxy over the last 2 centuries. It made Ahriman weep for the sake of spite and jealousy.
Was it worth it, Russ?
A voice came from above, resonating with the sorrow of the ages. It was a voice that knew neither surprise nor joy, and was all the sadder for having once basked in such wonder.
Don't speak,
Jean sighed. The voice emanated from everywhere and nowhere. A disembodied spirit that could have been whispering in his ear or shouting from deep inside the librarium.
I wish to ask you something.
You did not need to travel to the...
But some things are best spoken of face to face. Father to son.
There was a pause. Then, a sudden swelling of presence. a fundamental change in the secret physics of the world. The raised above it as a god above his domain. The world curved away, as though he were a giant stood upon a globe, and he saw the fiefdoms of the warrior sorcerers who thousands, these paltry few.
Once lived, but history will not permit it.
Unquenchable faith in their mission can alter the course of history.
The Crimson King, he was Magnus of the One Eye. All these epithets and more had been heaped upon him, some in praise, most in fear. The Magnus that towered above Ahriman was clad as he last a blood-red breastplate, sheathed in twin amber mail, a kilt of sun-baked leather, edged in gold and stamped with an... His crimson hair was wild, the mane of a visionary or madman. The Primarch's features were bronzed light, the sun at the core of his being, simultaneously filling his fictive body with its radiance and self-creating it. A singular orb of gold, flecked with undreamed colors and hardened by the sorrow of one who rued the day he saw further than he ought. This was Magnus as he wished to appear, being on the cusp of some great transformation which not even he could know the answer to his knees. Since coming to the planet of the sorcerers, Magnus had demanded that none of his sons bend the knee to him, but some habits died hard. Contrary to outward appearances, the top of Magnus's tower was open to the elements, and the kaleidoscopic storms raging overhead were close enough to touch, blistering energies of unimaginable power, an elixir in Ahriman's blood.
It's incredible.
Magnus walked a slow circuit of the tower, and capricious arcs of lightning slithered around him as though he were a lodestone. Magnus felt Ahriman's stare.
Out in me is that of the great ocean, into something purer, but still chaotic.
In the presence of Magnus, it was impossible not to feel like a helpless student at the feet of an omnipotent master. There was so much Ahriman wanted to ask, but he forced his tumultuous thoughts into the placid enumerations to focus himself.
Something I think you should see.
Yes, I know. You have...
You know?
Magnus turned and gave him a skewed look.
Did you really think I wouldn't?
Ahriman realized he had been great work, but was still surprised at how transparent he must have been.
This is why you...
Are you entrusted to my care? And there is a smell that I believe will...
Why?
...tower like black fangs in the mouth of a predator.
Because I need your help. We cannot do this without you. We have learned much, but we are blind men searching for revelation in all the wrong places.
So you... Well, I do not trust path, my son. Trust me, I know the nobility that drives you. Only to be deceived by the very power you believed had brought you success.
But surely, together, we could find...
I cannot help you. Moreover, I will not help you. And you are to cease all efforts in this matter.
No, I do not.
Without seeming to move, Magnus swelled to become a towering giant, a feral beast of blood-matted fur with hardened skin. His single eye became a molten sun that pinned Ahriman in place, a carcass set for the spit.
Your little cabal is no more, who ignores my warning or breaks faith with me. He shall be my enemy, and I will visit all of us, that from now until the end of all things, he shall rue the day he turned from my light.
Ahriman recognized the words, and the bitterness that dripped from every syllable. Only one question remained to be asked.
Why?
Because Manithorns.
The awful threat, and as his physique returned to its former stature.
Matters greater than your legion's end?
Magnus did not answer, above him, as though the answer lay within them.
Tell me, that I might understand why you abandon us.
Magnus nodded, and reached out to place a bronze-skinned hand upon his shoulder. The planet of the sorcerers fell away. Araman felt a terrible dislocation, like the wrench of a teleport, but 100 times worse. His gen-enhanced frame, bioengineered to resist the extremes of any environment, was suddenly that of a frail mortal, as his subtle body was ripped from his flesh. His body of light soared through the great ocean, on it, a presence of such power that he dared not look directly upon it. But in the trackless wildernesses of the great ocean, it was no longer constrained by any constancy of form. Stars and galaxies spiraled around him, an endless parade of random events that were not random at all. Everything proceeded to the design of fate's architect, a pattern so grand it could only be glimpsed from beyond the farthest extremes of existence, beyond Araman's ability to comprehend. Its bone-deep vertigo and a dizzying sense of falling. He struggled not to cry out. He was nothing to this universe. An insignificant grain amidst a desert of wind-scattered dust formed from the inconsequences of the galaxy. He was not special. He was not anything.
No! I am Arzen!
And with that thought, he was whole again. A warrior scholar of the Thousand Suns. He forced his mind into the second enumeration, where bodily concerns were put aside in favor of the pursuit of enlightenment. His body was gone, and in its place was a shimmer of light. A conglomeration of wheels turning within wheels, eyes by the million, and a form of... This was the purest expression of thought. The voice of... Each word freighted with terrible foreknowledge.
Come, my son, see what I see, and tell me I am wrong to think beyond your concerns.
Suddenly, Araman did not want to look. Once he looked, nothing would ever be the same. But he could not refuse his Primarch's demand, and the comfort of ignorance was something to be shunned. His shining body flew close to the radiant form of Magnus.
Show me everything.
Everything? No, not that. Never that. But I will show you enough.
Enough for what?
Enough to know that we still have a choice. We are remembered by the tides of history.
The stars wheeled around them, streaking by the speed of thought. And where thought willed them, they arrived in an instant. Like gods, they bestrode the galaxy. Traveling, Araman had just begun to appreciate the wonder of his Primarch's power when he realized that they had stopped moving. The world resolving around him in the familiar patterns of stars and the elliptical orbits of planets.
Where are we?
This is Swergalza, the carrion world of the night and torment, where the screams of the dying are never ending. A place from which my brother wages a campaign of genocide. It is from here that he was sent to fight the First Legion of the Lion.
They spun through the system, past worlds dead and worlds ravaged by conflict, mayhem, and the collateral damage of 2 legions at war. Araman felt his gaze drawn towards the system's edge, where a vicious battle raged in the void, 2 fleets battering at one another at close range. Intermingled washing the space between them with high explosive and split apart as their keels broke. Araman saw thousands of soul lights flickering out of existence, lives lost by the hundreds every second.
This is the death rattle of the Thramas Crusade.
A ghost of light bearing witness to the cold, airless slaughter. The black ships bearing the winged sword were in the ascendance, reaping a dreadful tally among the midnight ships of the Night Lords. But it seemed the 8th Legion was not seeking a decisive engagement.
For 2 years, they have beaten them. In this battle, the war is over, and my brothers retire to lick their wounds.
Who was the victor?
Though the Dark Angels still bear with them the seeds of their own destruction. In such times, can anyone be called the victor?
The heavens blurred again, and this time Araman felt resistance to their passage. One by one, the stars went out, snuffed like candles in a novitiate's dormitory, until all was darkness. Beyond the black curtain, Araman saw a burning world, cracked and ravaged by fire. Its continental plates had split apart, and an eightfold symbol was burned into its crust. Beyond this was a planet wreathed in a glittering corona of battle, a red world bathed in blood onwards to see what new insanity was at play. But a gentle psychic pressure from Magnus halted him.
No, my son! To come any closer would see you tainted by the madness that would drag Sanguinius and his angels to their doom.
The blood angels?
He knows both paths end in blood, but he is stronger than anyone understands. Well, almost. But even he does not truly know his brother's wounded heart.
The image of the blood-red planet faded, replaced by the vast gulfs of wilderness that the human mind was incapable of grasping.
Bro Burns, because I thought I knew more than anyone else. If we are to choose a course for our legion, I would have it be the right one. And to that end, I travel the stars and time itself to find my brothers, to know with whom...
...around him grow ever more claustrophobic, like the walls of a meditation chamber inexorably closing in. What had felt unimaginably huge and spacious a moment ago now felt cramped and constricting.
That is the weight of our decision. Pressing in, I will have to choose a side.
Why must you choose a side? We were betrayed by the Emperor, and Horus Lupercal has nothing to offer us.
Thank you, sir. Then let me show you Ultramar.
The glittering form of Magnus flared brightly, dragging Ahriman in his wake as they plummeted through space once more, withered in the hellstorm of its doomed star. Its cities were flayed by radioactive winds, and those souls not yet below in the sub...
I know this world. I came here after visiting the Crystal Library on Prandium. This is Kalth.
The gold and azure of the 13th Legion and the bruised red of the 17th. The Ultramarine's vessels regrouped 500 worlds. Even as on the planet's surface, like the most terrible eruption on the surface of a star. Invisible to the naked eye, it was a vast outpouring of inchoate energies to those with a link to the ether. It engulfed Kalth Prison, a ruined storm of epic proportions that burned like a voracious forest fire. Uncontrolled, raw, a material realm without direction, a raging barrier of hatred and spite that was impassable to all but the most powerful individual, beggared belief. And Ahriman found it hard to comprehend that something so devastating could come about naturally. But who, except the Thousand Suns, at the...
Monarchia?
Monarchia? No, Log. Logar's vision is grander and wider than the death of a single world, and the cold will play out in all its majesty and tragedy. Already the pieces are moving, and I sense that this will be the key to everything.
Lorgar dares to assault the 500 worlds. Has he gone mad? Gilliman's army is a legion. Lorgar could never defeat the host of Ultramar.
Glittering amusement passed through the luminosity of...
I will pass your sentiments to my brother when next I see him. After all, history teaches us that there is no such thing as an invincible army. But sometimes, history needs a push.